You're listening to Repcast, the official podcast of San Diego Repertory Theater. This episode features Talking Theater with Todd, a tribute to Arthur Wagner. This audience engagement event was recorded live Thursday, January 21st, 2016, prior to a performance of Outside Mullingar. It was hosted by San Diego Repertory Theater Associate Artistic Director Todd Salovey. Please enjoy.
Well, welcome. My name is Todd Salovey, and this program is Talking Theater with Todd. We do a program every Thursday preview for every show that we did here at the Rep, and I try to give some insight into the play that you're about to see. The Thursday previews used to be a little closer to opening. Now the Thursday previews are the first previews, so you're the actual first audience to see the show. I happen to be the director of the show. It's Outside Mullingar that you're going to see tonight. So welcome to Talking Theater with Todd. I have an extraordinary set of guests. There was no question in my mind that the first chance I got, I was going to do a tribute to my teacher and mentor and inspiration, Arthur Wagner, who unfortunately passed this past year at 92 years old. And I don't know, I was thinking a lot about, well, how do you sum up who Arthur was? I mean, we know that he was a renowned teacher, a theater director, the founding director of the UCSD Department of Theater. I think it had 8 undergraduates when he came. It became one of the top 3 graduate programs in the nation under his leadership. Not only was he a mentor and a teacher and a director and an actor, but he and his wife Molly were tremendous supporters of arts in San Diego, at UCSD, and beyond. I guess the simplest thing to say about Arthur Wagner is we knew a great man. There was an amazing tribute to Arthur at UCSD, which became sort of a celebration of the history of UCSD and the history of the Department of Theater and Dance. And as I left it, and it was just extraordinary, an incredible testament to the work of a person and a team of people who envisioned something and made it happen. But as I left, I remember thinking, this will never happen again. That all of these people gathered together to celebrate and talk about the oral history of something that has been essential in my life, my work, my training. I just thought that, well, I had this relationship with Arthur, and it's amazing that to me he was a mentor, a teacher, a father, an inspiration, and he was that too to thousands of other people as well. When I think about Arthur, the thing that I actually think about, I feel like I'm a juggler, the thing that I actually think about is actually not something that he personally did with me. But the first show that I ever directed at UCSD, I was a grad student at UCSD from 1987 to 1990, so that makes me relatively young. And my first show that I did was a play called The Jewish Wife. It's kind of interesting seeing the work that I've done since then. And having come to the Rep, I cast a Latina as the Jewish wife. So all the things I later became as an artist were sort of already in place. Little did I know in my first show. And, Luchi Garcia played The Jewish Wife, and she'd been in an acting class with me, taught by Arthur. And I guess her work was a little bit melodramatic before working with Arthur. And I remember in this piece of The Jewish Wife, she had this long monologue, and she was making a breakthrough in her work in that production. And on the opening night of it, sitting down, and we were in a small theater, that's what it's called, 409 Small. There were probably 30 seats in 409 Small. So down the row from me was Arthur. And I watched Arthur watch Luchi. And just, I can't even describe it, but like, he was carrying her for the entire performance. And you saw there a breathtaking example of the care and love that a teacher had for one of his students in her moment of growth and breakthrough. And I never forgot that moment. I've also been teaching at UCSD since 1991. And that moment is my inspiration as a teacher, that that's what we are there for, to provide that. And if there was any teacher, you know, that I ever had who all he was about was the success of his or her students, that's Arthur Lechter. So I'm really honored to have a chance to speak about Arthur as a person, as a teacher, and as a theater artist. And you may be surprised at the breadth of the influence he's had on the people that are here. So first of all, I want to introduce the first person on my left, who I'm amazed is here. The first time I saw him speak was at Arthur's tribute, and he is Arthur Wagner's son, Wayne Wagner. Please welcome him.
Hello. Thank you.
Wayne's left is a faculty member at UCSD in speech and voice. She is an actress who's worked across the country in major theaters as an actress. She's also a playwright and a director and a colleague of mine. Please welcome Eva Barnes. And I feel like the San Diego Rep heavyweights are making a bookend of this evening. But to my far left is, in the 40th year, the founder and visionary of San Diego Repertory Theater. He'll be soon directing Rapture Blister Burn at the end of our season. Please welcome Sam Woodhouse. Would be very surprised to know that we are in here today in the 40th season of San Diego Rep watching a premiere of a play because of Arthur Wagner. Sam, tell us about what did Arthur's role in getting the San Diego Rep into the Lyceum Theater?
Okay, I'm going to make this a condensed story. So where there's now a parking lot where you park your car, there used to be a theater called the Lyceum Theater. It was built in 1912. Dick Van Dyke played there. Other sort of middle stars on the national touring circuit played there. In the mid-70s, I'll get my time right here, mid-60s, the theater had been purchased by Vincent Miranda, who was the porn king of Southern California. And he began a seven-year run uninterrupted of a double bill of Deep Throat and The Devil and Miss Jones at the Lyceum Theater south of Horton Plaza, the real plaza. When you drive your car into the parking lot on F Street, and you drive in, if you look to your right, you can go back 50 years, the Lyceum Theater would be sitting there. This was a 412-seat vaudeville house that had been a legitimate theater for many, many years, built in 1912, with this long history of legitimate theater that, as downtown decayed, for those of you who've been here, you remember back then, no one would come south of Broadway. There were porn houses everywhere, just coffee shops where you get a 10-cent cup of coffee. And the Lyceum Theater, which had been legitimate, became porn house, and then Pete Wilson and Ernest Hahn. Remember Pete Wilson?
Yes.
Yeah, Ernest Hahn, the largest shopping center developer west of the Mississippi, decided that they, after walking around downtown San Diego one day and walking south of Broadway, that they had to fix this problem. And so they imagined tearing down 8 square blocks in the middle of the city and building a shopping mall that closed its walls off to the rest of the community. So what we have here, as you can see, we edited this place. It's a fortress, which is supposed to change eventually soon. Nevertheless, they walked around and they conceived of this shopping mall that would bring revitalized downtown. The Union Tribune had been here right next door, had been here originally before it went to Mission Valley. There was a lot of activity down here. Dobson's was like the press room bar where all the scribes went and hung out decades ago. Okay. So this was the state of downtown. And in the middle of this 8-square-block area was the Lyceum Theater, proudly showing Deep Throat and The Devil Miss Jones. So they said, well, we can get rid of this place. So Vince Miranda leased it out to John Wortman, who was an entrepreneur who created a show called The Lyceum Follies. And The Lyceum Follies was a two-hour review of recreating great acts that had played at the Lyceum, like a vodka act. And it had an MC who's still around, and at intermission, they would pass out green cards that said, Save the Lyceum, a legitimate theater. And they were with the address of City Hall. And people would fill it out, they'd collect them during the show and mail them to City Hall. So suddenly, out of nowhere, this porn house had this movement going that it needed to somehow invest. So here comes Pete Wilson, and here comes Ernest Hahn, and right in the middle of their dreams, this thing that they thought was a trash heap is now this little jewel. And so a campaign began. I'm trying to remember Jim, I can't remember his name now, but Mike Gotch was a county board of supervisors member years ago. He was instrumental. There were some people who were instrumental in recognizing that there was a theater in this blueprint, and maybe it shouldn't just be destroyed. So the preservation movement began. Next door to the Lyceum Theater was the Horton Grand Hotel, which in the movement of creating this big square black area was picked up brick by brick and moved down the street to where it is now, the Horton Grand Hotel. Okay? Next to the Grand was the Lyceum, and next to the Lyceum was the Nightclub, which had a cabaret series, and people would perform at the Lyceum and come after the show and sing songs and do stuff. So it became the theater bar of San Diego at one point. So slowly the city government, CCDC, started to condemn all this property, and they buy the way they do rebuild, they condemn it, buy it up, and then tear it down and sell it to someone else, and they build a high rise. The tax rate goes up, and that money goes back into the system. We're used to it anyway, before Jerry Brown took the money in Sacramento. they started to buy up all this land, and Vince Miranda kept running the Lyceum as this theater. And eventually, the city bought the Lyceum, and Don Wortman went away. And we, Doug Jacobs and I, said, goodness gracious, there's a 412-seat theater now. Maybe we could use it while they figure out when they're going to build the shopping center. Sure enough, they leased it to us for $1 a year. And we moved in there, and I tell you, it was a dirty place. And we cleaned it up, sort of. And we get about 5 shows in there. Anybody ever go see any of our shows? At the Lyceum Theater, The Elf, The Man of Christmas Carol, Tin Types, Death of a Salesman? Nobody.
Yeah,
you did? Yeah,
some of you. I've been following you.
You did, yeah. And this was the time when the word was, no one will go below Broadway. Forget it. People will not drive and park their car because the vermin of the world lives there. I'm not kidding you. And I remember the day that the head of the Center City Development Corporation came to a production of Christmas Carol in the old Lyceum with children in the lobby. And he looked around and said, do you realize, Sam, that children don't come down here? And you have brought children south of Broadway. You can imagine that. That was a long time ago. So, suddenly, this Lyceum was a viable place, and we began, I don't know how you want to characterize the history of the movement that said, if you're going to tear down the Lyceum to put up a parking lot, which is your plan, no kidding, you need a new Lyceum in the new mall. And we began an advocacy campaign for such, which led to a long and complicated history, which I won't go through. The head of the Center City Development Corporation said, we walked in and we said, we'll make a deal. The rep will put in $1 million if Ernest Hahn, the developer, puts in $1 million and the city puts in $1 million. Can you imagine that, a $3 million? And they said, are you kidding? No city's going to spend $1 million on a theater. Get out of here. Literally, take this out. So 7 years later, they spent $8 million to build this place. And then they had to figure out what to do with it. Make it either, they dug a hole in the ground, started to build a mall, and they decided, will this be an ice skating rink or a theater? And they literally, some people believe that what downtown needed was an ice skating rink. That's what I said. We started cutting, you're kidding, And so we started a campaign and said, no, why don't you replace the Lyceum Theater? And that started to gain some traction. The question became, well, what would the model be for it? And the question became, should there be a resident company? And we said, we'll be a resident company. And they said, who are you? And, you know, we didn't look like you. It was a company at that time. And so we had to legitimize ourselves and make a case for the fact that San Diego Rep, which was at that point about 6 years old, had a legitimate commitment and maturity and ability to produce in this theater. And the concept of what a resident theater would be and how this building would be run needed the advice of wise theater people. Enter Arthur Ware, who was the wise theater man of San Diego at that time, in charge of the Distinguished University Program, who had a lot of credibility in addition to being very smart and experienced, and to the city fathers and mothers, as it were, lended us credibility and said, if you want a theater to work, you need a resident company, you need someone who's committed to the community, and this company, San Diego Rep, has proven in 6 or 7 short years that they are committed. And he began a process with us and others that led to the formation on Mahomestown of the Horton Plaza Theater Foundation, which is our quote-unquote landlord. And he was the first president of the Horton Plaza Theater Foundation, which became the oversight organization when we moved into this building in 1986. So that's the short version.
I think that's completely unknown history. I've been here at the Rep 26 seasons, and it's the first time I've ever heard the whole story. But I know that Arthur took a lot of pride in it. A lot of pride in it. And had a lot of connection to Sam and Doug. I was joking with Sam and with Molly that the when I interviewed at San Diego Repertory Theater, so that would be in 1990, as I was graduating from UCSD, I said to Arthur, you know, I met with Sam Woodhouse, and we talked theater. He's really smart. And Arthur said to me, of course. He went to UC Santa Barbara. Arthur also believed in the UC system, clearly. Now, because this is talking theater with Todd, and because I think we're seeing a play tonight that is exactly the kind of play that Arthur would love. It's an actor's play. In fact, two of the actors in the play tonight are students of Arthur's. Manny Fernandez, who plays Anthony in the show, was an undergraduate at UCSD, and he took a text analysis class. And Carla Harding, who was a graduate student at UCSD, who plays Rosemary, also studied with Arthur Wagner in the graduate program. But I wanted to talk, and as I did also, I wanted to talk about Arthur's method of training actors. And I thought there'd be no better person to describe what did Arthur do, Eva, as you were also in the graduate program and a colleague of Arthur's. What was Arthur's methodology of teaching?
So I was a graduate student at UCSD. Is that Kim Wong? Kim Wong, also a graduate student, also a student of Arthur's. And Todd, as you know, he just said. Arthur, I remember this is my notebook. I told Todd, I had that notebook, and I found it this afternoon. And so I took a look at that. For Arthur, the actor is the center of the theatrical event. And for Arthur, a lot of bad habits, you know, every actor comes in with, you know, their version of acting. And Arthur very gently and with nurture and love and discipline really had to be very specific with text analysis and with character analysis. So I was thinking today, so the very first assignment Arthur had was something called an action objective exercise. So here were the things that you had to come into a room, you had to take off an article of clothing, the shoes, and nothing, you know, You sit down.
That direction has changed a lot of
years. Sit or lie down, and not three times. Do you remember this?
Absolutely.
But it had to be 5 minutes long.
Oh.
So then you think, whoa, you know, that could take 15 seconds. But I come in, I take off my scarf, I sit down, and oh, you know, okay, so I'm done. But it was 5 minutes. So and no talking. And you have to, every single movement, you had to write down and why. So the first thing is, who, you know, the question, who am I? Where am I? Why am I here? What do I want? What stands in my way? What are the obstacles? What do I need to do to get what I want? So in a way, you create, each actor had to create a very full 5-minute play without words, and everything had to, you couldn't, everything had to be authentic. You know, I couldn't come in and go, you know. So if I was tired, I had to run around the theater 5 times and come in tired because I was late or whatever. So whatever choices I made had to be very, very authentic, so that there was no schmacking. It was very truthful, but it also had, the stakes had to be high, so that it was, Arthur always said, make juicy choices. Because otherwise it's not theater. Otherwise it's, you know, it's not drama. If there are no obstacles, if there's, you know, if there's nothing to work against, to press against, if there's no urgency.
If you have all the time in the world, then where's the drama?
But if you have, you have to accomplish this, what are the stakes? You know, so life and death stakes of some sort.
So that was the first exercise, and it really caused you to be, a playwright.
And then the second one, we got to talk, and that was with a partner. That was a planned improvisation. Now that seems, you know, how can be planned and an improvisation? Do you remember this time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
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 Well, Kim and I are still doing these exercises.
As am I. When
you do it.
Because they're very thorough. So the next step after you, the author of, you know, of this one-person show, very authentic, important one-person show, then you have a partner.
Yeah.
And you put the same things. Who am I?
What's the relationship?
And so if we just met right now, there's nothing at stake.
However, if we've been friends since childhood, or brother and sister,
or some, then there's already a juicy choice, right? Rather than, you know, ordinary, oh, I just met you at the bus stop. Then I've got nothing to lose. Then, you know, you build backstory. Each of us has an objective. So then we're a player. Each person has this interesting. So then you have an objective, because every scene, you know, there's a character, there's relationships, and then there are objectives, and objectives that we have in life. What do I want? And again, it has to be a juicy choice. It can't be, oh, I want, you know, I'm thirsty, so I need a glass of water, you know.
What do I want from Todd, for example? From Wayne, right? What do I want? What are the obstacles?
And then, in the back, it can't be easy to get. So we built all these things, the given circumstances. And then you just meet, then the improvisation starts in the acting classroom, where you can't, you're not going to tell, ask Todd that I, you know, that, you know, he's been the successful, you know, Todd, you've been the successful one, and you really need to help me out. Can I borrow $5 million? Right. So that's not a play. That's all over. But so I'm going to say, hey, how are you doing? You know, you're doing really well. You know, things are going well here for you at the web. So, you know, so that, like, you had, you know, you just...
Surrounded by construction, but other than that, it's okay.
So you must be in the flush. In the,
yeah, I have a $3 million remodel happening in my lobby.
You see, you know, things aren't going so well for me.
So then, as actors, you're creating dialogue, but you know, authentic. authentic dialogue based on the backstories. And that's the second exercise. And then finally we get where the dialogue is given to you, but you have to dig out all the, because the play is only dialogue, you have to, what's the relationship, what does the playwright tell you? What do other the other characters tell you? And then what do I say about myself? Erica always had, you always had to say, what do I say about myself? And that's what the character says. So the character might, I might say about myself, I'm a real go-getter, but I might not be a go-getter. I might be a very shy person who wants to be a go-getter. So anyway, so then you dig all these things out from the text. Here, so this is my notebook, and you do that by all of these.
What play is this?
This is Loose Ends by Michael Weller. So then with every, you've got this whole play, but within the play, there are units, you know, there are scenes, and then there are units of action. And in each unit of action, it's called a beat. Then there are different, you know, I might have an objective, what do I want for this unit, and how do I accomplish what I want? How do I get what I need from the other person? So if you were, so, and you always have to be juicy, active choices. So here I have to smack him, to pulverize, to grind him, to clarify, to cut the BS, to touch, to lighten up. She's clearly needs to lighten up a little. then to squish, to take back.
Yeah. Squish is
great. Right?
Well, Arthur liked when it had a physical component
Absolutely.
To it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I think what's so striking, and I think what really nobody going into UCSD in acting was considering, is that there's an extensive discipline of breaking a text into these units and finding a way for you to enter into the dialogue and into the character. And the hugest tribute to Arthur is that all these years later, in 2016, Kim Walsh and I have 200 intro to acting students every single quarter. 200. Take this. Every single quarter. One of my students right here. And we teach this. That we learned from Arthur. And, you know, in the Jewish tradition, we call this a Masorah, which means that we are passing down what was taught to us by our teachers. And Arthur was that kind of a teacher. He taught it so well, he imbued you with an excitement about it, and a deep understanding, so much so that you just wanted to take it on and teach it yourself.
I was just going to say, but also what you're talking about is how I approach directing play in rehearsal. So it's not just for acting training, it's how you analyze events in a story. The fact that you've got behavior and you have to create justification for it is the same kind of thing we do when we analyze a script. Anyway, that's all.
So I have been, as my kids, you know, I'm like sort of this theater father. If you read my program, my name of the program, it's always like, I want to thank my kids. And I talk about my kids all the time. And I was talking about my kids like they're 8 and 12. But my kids are actually 19 and 22. And I think that to be the child of a director and former actor and an acting teacher must be a special experience. And so I thought there would be no one more I could learn about my kid's experience of being a child of this person than from Wayne. So what was it like to have this renowned acting teacher as your dad?
Well, it was exciting, for sure. The things that I remember about being a kid when my dad was developing all these techniques that were new. I mean, he really thought of this stuff pretty much all by himself. He had mentors like all people do, these famous acting teachers. They were teaching method acting and the things that were popular in the 50s. But he kind of wanted to take it a little bit deeper than that. And then I always knew that my dad was a highly intelligent man. And so that was the thing that always impressed me as a child, was how smart he was. And the reason that he loved UCSD and teaching in the academic setting, because he could kind of choose the people that he wanted to work with.
Yeah.
And I've seen them all. I've known my dad's students since I was 6 years old. I've known every one of them. Guys, going back as far as I can remember, I'm probably the only person that can see there's a certain congruency to the people that he always chose to work with, and that was their own intelligence. Because you can't be stupid and do transactional analysis,
that's right.
Because you got to think and you got to.
That's the system.
Yeah, the system. And so my dad was unique because he wanted to stay in the public realm of teaching, but he also taught outside, and he was in the private sector, and was an acting teacher. But he always loved coming back to the graduate students because they were more like him. Mm-hmm. You know, they were highly intelligent, could grasp the concept, they were just pretty faces that he saw in Hollywood, and didn't want to waste his time on people that couldn't get it. And so, for me, it was just incredible to see my dad's incredible brain and how easy it really came for him to do this stuff. And how much he enjoyed passing it on to people who could get it, you know, and contemplate it, you know, because not everybody can. It's a hard concept. Transactional analysis is really a deep psychological endeavor and exercise.
And this is something that Arthur developed. There's this the games people play with a book by Eric
Byrne.
And so it talked about different ego states. And Arthur used this as a tool for scene study and for character study. So, you know, the most adult-to-adult is the safest, right? But that's not dramatic. So then there are different ego states.
The interaction between the three states, the Freudian, consciousness, the ego, the id, and the self, was what he brought into the transaction analysis, in which, you know, where are your motivations coming from, and then how do people interact with those motivations. And so he was thinking about ways that to simplify that ability to see where people come from, and the games that people play are part of that kind of understanding of the way people interact with each other. Somehow, he was able to put that into a theory of acting that is beyond my, you know, kind of comprehension.
So
I see how well you guys do it, you know.
Explain to us, there are two things that, if anyone who worked with Arthur knew two things. One was Niggy Sob, and the other was confecting the child. Could you explain those two?
So early on in acting class, Arthur said to confect the free child. And I thought, okay, confect, that sounds like a pretty cool word. What does that mean? And it means to, like, wake up the child. Because the kid part of you is the artist part of you that is daring, does, you know, naughty things or dangerous things or takes risks. And the adult. So there are the ego states. There's parent, adult, and child. And there's a nurturing parent and critical parent.
Oh, you're going to see that in the show tonight.
Mostly critical parents.
Right,
yes.
You're going to see that in the show tonight.
And then adult, and then child. And then there's a free child, or I think the adapted child.
That's right.
Yeah. So, you know, lots of the drama, there'll be like a critical parent, you know, both might be adult, but a critical parent-child, you know, or even in relationships, sometimes all of a sudden, you know, like your spouse is telling you what to do, and you're like, you know, it's kind of good, so that might be parental, right, and you might go into the kid, or, so anyway, you can draw, or your colleague, right, might, anyway, there are these various games, and Arthur, and we're talking that there are, you know, degrees of the game. And one of the that was now I got you, son of a bitch.
That's
it was a
way you encountered somebody. It was, you know, it was how would you describe it?
Yeah,
you
son of a bitch. That's exactly
what is that?
It's when you really nail the son of a bitch.
Right. Or yes.
Really,
yeah, yes, but
is another game where somebody is where you are defending what you're, yes, well, you, yes, but this, yes, 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 and the other person is, you know, wagging their finger at you.
And the thing for my dad was that he was just trying to do the simplest way he could to get people to understand the way people act in the real world, and whether they're coming from the parent or the adult or the child, was just very Freudian. And trying to be the actor to see where that character was coming from vis-a-vis that. And am I coming from this adult and your child and the way that characters interacted? And he somehow was able to explain that in a pretty simple way through transactional analysis. And that's his amazing vision. It's a hard concept to take that to the stage.
Right. So he's taking actors who may just be very charismatic, have great voices, strong bodies, and look great on stage. And he was teaching us. Well, I wasn't any of those, but he was teaching them. he was teaching them how to understand relationships between people and the way people encounter and act with each other, and transfer that to characters and plays. And I think that's the sign of an Arthur Wagner coach scene or a play, is that there's a deep sense of believability in the character and truth in the relationship, and a focus on, you know, working towards a need in the scene. And you can just see how any scene is really driven by those factors.
You know, I just have to say, and this, of course, makes perfect sense, we would think we planned this, but the play you're going to see tonight is a manifestation of everything we do here in terms of the kind of behavior and where Todd comes from, choosing this play, loving this play, and the work they've done in this play. And all the sort of theoretical concepts you're hearing are manifest next door in a few minutes.
Well, that's why I really thought that talking about Arthur in the context of Outside Molinar and John Patrick Shanley would be relevant.
You will see parental behavior, you will see what free child that's what.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not sure what you guys call free child, but I'd say there's a moment in the play, I'd say that child is really free. And you didn't expect it to come, and you didn't see it coming. So I don't know. Just I'm not a student of ours, it's just interesting to me to hear this and think about the play I saw it here.
Yeah, cool. And you know, once a week, we would have free child day on Fridays. Do you remember? And we would play games. We would play like games, you know, like red light, green light. And you can bet that all of a sudden you want to win, right? It's very important to tag that person. And all of a sudden, like, that kid thing is awake and alive. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's the part. You know, kids, you know, they are going to go after that objective. Anybody who has kids, you know, no matter what, you know, if they want that, what do I want? What stands in my way? What am I willing to do to get what I want? Well, I'm willing to do just about anything, right? So, anyway, so that was...
My dad had a huge child inside of him. And so I think that's his favorite.
You are the outer child and the inner child.
That's for sure.
My guest today, this is Talking Theater with Todd, and my guests today are Wayne Wagner, Eva Barnes, and Sam Woodhouse, and we're talking about the master acting teacher who passed this year, Arthur Wagner. I just wanted to close today with maybe each of us, I haven't told everybody to ask this, but going down, and when you think of Arthur, because we just have like 60 seconds for everybody, but when you think of Arthur, what's an image that comes to mind for you?
Well, for me, it's actually very clear, because about 6 days ago, they destroyed the staircase in the middle of the office. It's been there for 30 years. And an ongoing, multiple impression memory that I have of Arthur, of him walking down those stairs with Mom and going, Sam, you're still here! For 30 years. And the stairs are gone, so. And I was so proud that I was still there when he said it.
That's great. I have two things. One is my colleague and friend, Ursula Meyer, who teaches at UCSD. When Arthur passed away, she said, Arthur was like a king who is also your dad. And I just love that. And because it, and then the other thing is, when our
Monica was very sick the last couple of days. I was visiting him, and he motioned me to lean in close, and I thought something really important is coming. And he said, have as much fun as you can. And I just love that, because the joy, life has its ups and downs, it's tough, but that joyful child spirit that you talk about, have as much fun as you can.
Well, I mean, for me, my dad was my dad, and I saw him hold court a lot, and he never, ever thought of himself like that. And he was such a humble and giving and incredibly warm person. And the last thing he said to me was the show must go on, which is
wow.
A very similar ritual.
Wow.
But very happy he told me he loved me, and we knew it was over. If you're in the theater, the show must go on. And so that's the thing I remember about my dad most.
In the last couple of years that I knew Arthur wasn't so well in the last couple of years, but even in his 90s, he was at every show. Every show. Probably came to Arthur, no question that Arthur Wagner and Molly Wagner have seen more of my work than anyone, including my parents. No question about it. You could hear the rep. And I just came this flip to me that happened about 3 years ago, that when I would see Arthur, I would give him a kiss. And all I can say is that he was a great teacher, a great person, a great mentor, but someone who just inspired love. Gave love and inspired love. And I just want to wrap up today, as we're going to see the first preview of a brand new production here, that we are really, literally, biologically, educationally, and spiritually all here because of Arthur Wagner, and it is amazing to be able to pay him a tribute and honor him with the show that we're doing tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for coming.
You've been listening to Repcast, the official podcast of San Diego Repertory Theater. Please visit our website at sdrep.org for more information on productions in our current 40th season and a preview of what we have in store for you in our upcoming 41st season. San Diego Repertory Theater produces intimate, exotic, provocative theater. We promote a more inclusive community through vivid works that nourish progressive, political, and social values and celebrate the multiple voices of our region. San Diego Repertory Theater feeds the curious soul.